Welcome to the AdjunctNation.com podcast interview series. I'm P.D. Lesko, executive editor of Adjunct Advocate magazine, and today I'm speaking with Dr. Judy Bates, president of the Wilfrid Laurier University Faculty Association. Dr. Judy Bates is an assistant professor in the Department of Geography and Environmental Studies at Wilfrid Laurier University in Ontario, Canada. Her research interests include local labor markets, changing work arrangements, paid and unpaid work. She's also the president of the Wilfrid Laurier University Faculty Association, which represents 366 part-time faculty who've gone out on strike, the first ever strike at Wilfrid Laurier University. Dr. Bates spoke with me from her office at the university about what the union hopes to gain from the strike and what the union hopes to bargain for on behalf of its 366 part-time faculty members.
There we go. All right. And my first question is, if you would just tell me a little bit about yourself and your position with the union.
Sure. I'm a professor at Wilfrid Laurier University. I'm in the geography department, and my area of research is economic geography. And I am president of the Wilfrid Laurier University Faculty Association that represents, we have two bargaining units in the Faculty Association. One represents full-time members and the other represents part-time members. Each is approximately the same size. The full-time bargaining unit is a little bit larger with slightly more than 400 members. The part-time bargaining unit has about exactly 366 members in it.
So 366 members. I've read in various news reports that those 366 members are now out on strike. How long did you bargain before you went out on strike?
The collective agreement for the part-time faculty came to an end in August of last year, and we have been bargaining, negotiating. We were doing some preparation work in August, and we started negotiating in September. And we have continued on right through until last Wednesday morning at 6 a.m. when negotiations finally broke down.
One question that I have is an obvious difference between what goes on or what seems to go on in Canada with part-time faculty labor unions. There have been a number of strikes recently, and I know that's actually out of the ordinary, but it seems as though the time that elapsed between when bargaining broke down and when the unit went out on strike is actually not a lot of time. Unions have hung on for years before calling a strike.
Well, what happened was that we were in what is called conciliation. We invited a conciliator to come and join in the negotiating to try and reach a settlement. The Faculty Association was concerned at the very slow pace of negotiations, and that's why we called for conciliation. It is the first step. You have to go through conciliation before you can go on strike, and we wanted to preserve our right to strike. So we asked the conciliator to invite the conciliator to come and join the negotiations. And what happens is, as happens normally under those circumstances, the conciliator meets with each side, each negotiating team independently, and then invites both sides to come and try to reach a settlement. The conciliator met with both sides, but then the university side decided that they needed time to do some preparation in response to a proposal that we had put on the table previously. And they kept the conciliator waiting for over 4 hours, during which time everybody was just sitting around twiddling their thumbs. And the conciliator took this as an example of a slow pace and immediately issued what here is called a no board report, which reflects her belief that the parties are too far apart and that a settlement cannot be reached at that time.
Irreconcilable differences.
The university negotiating team seems to have considered the time set aside for negotiation to be time set aside for preparation and negotiation, whereas we have come to the table ready to negotiate. They have always come to the table and then disappeared off into their caucus room to prepare to come and negotiate. and this has greatly slowed down the pace of negotiations.
I always have this question of union leaders, and that is, for all intents and purposes, when a contract expires, your members are still working under the auspices of that old contract. And when you negotiate the new contract, in 9 times out of 10, the terms are applied retroactively.
That's right.
So the question is always in my mind, what's the big deal? Why strike? Why not just keep working, just keep negotiating?
Because by striking, we can force the university to come up with a new settlement. If we continue to work under the old contract, why would the university ever decide to come up with a new settlement?
You're assuming, though, is that there's no good faith on the side of the university.
No, we're not assuming that, but we need to maintain that right to strike in order to improve the working conditions of our faculty. And just to continue working, why would anybody ever bother to improve working conditions? How would we ever get a settlement that way? The university rejected our proposal that we brought to the table that was focused on pay. We needed to make sure that our members were paid equitably according to the pay scales that are in operation in the universities in which we share a labour market. So that was one issue, pay. The second issue was that we want a step system so that people with higher levels of experience, longer periods of experience as contract academic staff get paid more than people who have just begun. And the third point was that we wanted a better system of seniority to give CAS members greater job security.
Why, for example, are they not willing to meet the pay? You're trying to match the pay of the CAS faculty at Waterloo.
At Waterloo,
yes.
Which is 5 minutes down the road.
So what were the university's responses?
The university offered 3.5%, which brings us up to about 6,211. But at Waterloo, they're being paid $6,700, and that's the minimum. If you teach in the Faculty of Science, Architecture, or any of the other faculties other than arts at Waterloo, you get between $7,000 and $7,500. Our pay, they were willing to raise up the pay for CAS members here to $6,211, and our members did not feel that that was adequate. They rejected the step system, which
right.
would have granted a higher level of pay for those who had more experience, and they rejected out of hand as well the seniority system that we were proposing. So
Why?
We were left with no alternative but to strike.
Why? Why did they reject it?
They give no reasons, merely that they reject it.
Okay. What is your suspicion?
They would like to continue with the revolving door. They don't want people to be using this as a means of livelihood. They would just like people to come in, teach, and go. We argue that people who come here to teach also do research and provide service, and that they give a lot to this university. The university is not recognizing their scholarly work, and is not recognizing their teaching abilities, is not recognizing their experience and expertise.
Well, that's actually not what happened. They stay on.
They stay. They do office hours. They do research. They do all sorts of things. But the university is not recognizing those contributions. At the moment, we have a seniority system that is based on a course-by-course basis.
Mm-hmm.
So you part-time faculty members teach a course, and every time they teach the course, they earn one seniority point. If they teach that course 3 times in a 24-month period, they will earn 3 seniority points, and then they will be eligible for seniority status. The problem with that system, first of all, there are 2 major problems with it. First of all, it's very difficult to administer. It's very hard to keep track of all those records of who has taught, who has earned how many points for what course. And the university produces spreadsheets, but they're very often inaccurate. The second point about it is that the problem is that if that course is reassigned to a full-time member or becomes part of a new full-time member's normal work arrangements, then the seniority is lost in that course, and that person no longer has an opportunity to teach that course and no longer has seniority. What we want is a system that recognizes that if you teach a course in your sub-discipline, over time you teach several courses in that sub-discipline, you gain a general expertise in that sub-discipline. So if you're teaching American history, for example, we would like a system whereby every course that you teach in that subdiscipline of American history, you get a seniority point. And once you have earned 15 seniority points, then you have seniority status in American history. And if any courses come up in that area, then you are eligible to teach those courses. It will provide our faculty members with much greater job security.
Other than courses assigned to full-time faculty members?
Other than courses that have, so for example, if a full-time faculty member is on sabbatical or is on maternity leave and has been teaching courses in American history, then those courses would automatically go to the person who has seniority in that area of American history.
This is very interesting because here in the United States, unions often argue the opposite, that part-time faculty should not have seniority for the reason that a course or courses should always be staffed by full-time, tenure line, or tenured faculty whenever possible. What you seem to be arguing for in your quest for seniority is permanent.
Tell you why, because what we would like to go to a pro rata system eventually. The norm at Wilfrid Laurier is, say, 5 courses. If a part-time person teaches 3 courses, that person should be paid 3/5 of a full-time salary, but also that person should then be doing research and scholarly work and service.
Do you know off the top of your head what the pay gap is between the CAS faculty and the tenure line or tenured faculty?
I think the average pay for a full-time person is somewhere around about $90,000. Part-time people get $6,001 per course. I think the maximum that they can teach is 8 courses. That would provide them with an income of $48,000, and they would be teaching, 8 courses a year, 3, 3, and 2. That's
so if we took the same 5 courses, which you just said is a full-time load, and multiplied that times the 6,000, it gives us $30,000.
That's right.
So the pay gap is 70%.
It's enormous.
It is enormous. So to go from a pay gap of 70% to pro rata pay, that's a giant step.
That
How long
a
will it take?
Step. Oh, it's not going to happen anytime soon, but that is our aim, is to, so we need to move towards that. So by providing seniority on this basis, we recognize that it is a start to force the university to recognize the scholarly contribution of these people to Wilfrid Laurier.
Again, this is a very interesting difference in that in California, for example, I don't know if you know, but there is pay equity money that the state gives to each community college to distribute to part-time faculty. And the part-time faculty unions had to negotiate parity. And in negotiating parity, one part of the job that was taken out was the scholarly work and the advising work that full-time faculty do. There was never any question that part-time faculty or contract faculty would be expected to do scholarly work or advising.
But then how do your part-time faculty ever compete in the labor market for full-time jobs? That's our goal, is that all of these part-time people should be given the opportunity to do research and scholarly work so that they are able to get a full-time tenure stream job. And if you only permit them to teach, how can they ever do that? From our perspective, you're cutting them off from any opportunity for full-time employment in the university, whereas we are trying to provide the opportunity for our part-time people to become competitive so that they can get full-time tenure stream positions in universities.
Again, I'm not trying to put you on the spot, but I'm going to ask you a numbers question, and that is, can you talk a little bit about the growth in the numbers of part-time or contract faculty in your particular union over the last decade?
You know, I can't. I don't have those figures with me.
Okay.
I don't have those figures.
Do you have a sense whether it's grown, just in general, whether it's grown, stayed the same?
Yes, it has grown. It has grown. I could call you back and give you those figures. I just don't have them at my fingertips right now.
And how about the number of full-time faculty? Has that grown? Stayed the
yes,
same?
Yes, it has grown. It has grown recently. We have gone through a fairly rapid growth period in this university recently. I don't know if you are aware, but in Ontario, we had a few years ago what became known as the double cohort. Students, the students' period in high school was cut by 1 year. So we had a double cohort, so 2 groups of students coming in at once to university. And so in order to accommodate those new students, we did experience a patch of rapid growth. The other issue is that we had, as with many universities in Canada, we had the first sort of major group of faculty members retiring. We had a large number of people retiring, and so many of those people were many of those people were replaced. So we have had very considerable renewal, as well as growth in recent years.
Mm-hmm.
But that also means that we've also taken on a younger group of faculty members and more women, many more women faculty members. So the need for CAS people has also increased with sabbaticals and with maternity leaves and also research leaves. The people who have replaced those who have left are much more research intensive, and are many more of them have research grants and are able to buy out part of their teaching, and that teaching is then going to a CAS member. So yes, there has been growth.
Uh-huh. Can you talk a little bit about the participation of part-time faculty in the leadership of the union?
We have a number of part-time faculty on our executive and we have the strike is being run primarily by part-time people.
Has there ever been a union president who was a temporary faculty member?
Yes. The president before me was a part-time faculty member.
Well, one of the delightful things, if one can say anything is delightful about a strike, has been the solidarity, the true solidarity of the full-time faculty members and the students at the university. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, the students have been quite remarkable, and as have the full-time faculty. We had a rally last Friday, and there were about 400 people came out. You have to remember that our part-time faculty teach at many other institutions in order to cobble together a living. So the part-time faculty on campus may number only 60 or 70 in any one day, because they're teaching at the University of Toronto or York University or Guelph or Hamilton or many of the other universities that are around here. So we had a huge number of part-timers out, we had full-timers out, and we had a wonderful group of students who have organized themselves. They are not part of the, this group is not led by the student union on campus. These are a group of committed students who are very supportive of their part-time faculty.
How many students
are there?
How many students are there at the institution?
In total, 13,000. That's on three campuses. We have a campus at Brantford, we have another one in Kitchener, and we have the main campus here, and that also includes the graduate students.
So the rally to which you just referred, I read that 400 colleagues showed up to show their support for the faculty.
That's right.
But they also came bearing gifts.
They did. They came bearing gifts. We had faculty from a number of other universities across Canada. Let me just explain briefly. Our faculty association and many, many other faculty associations in Canada pays dues to a national body, which is the Canadian Association of University Teachers. And CAUT also has an arm of its organization is the CAUT Defense Fund, and we all also pay dues to the CAUT Defense Fund. And that Defense Fund is run by trustees from all of the member associations. So we received a check for $1 million, which is actually a line of credit that we can draw upon as needed in the strike. And in addition to that, the Defence Fund pays a strike pay for all our striking members. And in addition, the trustees come in from across the country, and we had, I think, 9 this time, come in from across the country to come and support the strike.
I think it's important to point out that all of those faculty members who are on strike are getting strike pay, but that strike pay is about, it's less than $40 a day.
That is what the CAUT people offer. That's $38.50 a day, 7 days a week, tax-free and with no deductions. But we add to that, so they actually get, they will be getting $60 a day for every day, 7 days a week, that is tax-free, et cetera, et cetera.
So the $1 million that came from the strike fund, is that the normal amount that
yes.
CAUT usually allocates?
Yes.
You're trying to keep people from having to cross the picket line because of financial necessity. But I've read
exactly.
That people have crossed the picket line. Is this true?
I think a few people have crossed the picket line. So not surprisingly, it is those members who teach more than one course or more than two courses who are most committed to the strike, because it is in their best interest, of course, that we get the best possible settlement. Those who are here just to teach one course but who have full-time work somewhere else are obviously less committed.
I'm thinking back to the 70% pay gap. I wonder if in that decade the pay gap has closed, stayed the same, or opened.
I don't know the answer to that.
Right.
I strongly suspect that the gap has got larger.
So how confident are you that this will be settled quickly?
We are very hopeful that it will be settled quickly, but until we get back to the negotiating table, it's not going to be settled. And so, you know, we are hopeful that the university will come to its senses and call us back to the table.
This is obviously not the first contract the union has negotiated with the university, but it is the first strike of the part-time faculty.
It's the first strike, yes, of either the part-time or the full-time. We've settled strikes, we've settled negotiations previously in mediation, but we have never gone on strike previously.
So one has to look at it and go, has something changed in the relationship between university officials and the union?
We have a new president who started in September, and we're obviously wondering if he has some sort of different agenda, that is very different from our previous president's agenda.
This is always a question union presidents love, and that is, what percentage of the university's total budget do the CAS faculty salaries comprise?
It's considerably, I think we were talking about this the other day, I think it's something like 0.4%.
I mean,
it's very, very, very small.
Yes. Yes.
So in order to settle this, I think it would be less than 0.5% of 1%. You know, it's sort of coffee money.
Well, we are out of time. I want to thank you very much for taking time out of your busy schedule to speak with me.
This is P.D. Lesko, and you've been listening to a conversation with Dr. Judy Bates, president of the Wilfrid Laurier University Faculty Association.